It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
My answer never changes, to be quite honest with you. While MLS has improved, my answer still has always been the same, in that I think an MLS team would finish mid-table. Hello, Sunshine. I'm Alexi Lalas, and welcome to the State of the Union podcast, where we look at the beautiful game on and off the field through the lens of red, white, and blue-colored glasses. This show, we'll be talking MLS, CCC, UCL, referee blame game, Cold War, Micronesia, a mighty wind, MLS in APL, dreams, American Wunderkinds, Bay FC, and so much more. But first, joining me, as always, my friend, my colleague, my guiding light, David Mossy, a soccer savant and a Fox soccer researcher and writer extraordinaire. Mossy, how you doing on this Monday, March 18th in the year 2024?
I'm doing well. I hope all our Irish listeners had a happy St. Patrick's Day.
It's amateur night, but did you do anything? Did you go out or?
Well, yesterday was also the LA Marathon, which wraps up right here in Century City, which is close to where I live. So it was a very festive day around Brentwood between St. Patrick's Day and the marathon. So I was out and about taking it all in.
You were out in the community, out in the neighborhood, just walking around?
Yep.
Oh, my God. When I used to live over in Hancock Park, they used to run right by my door. And I'll never forget, I had a huge party with, if I had to list out all the different soccer people that were there, and it went on really late, and that was a Saturday night. And then on Sunday, I remember getting up in my bathrobe and walking out and watching the people run by. I was in terrible state, but it was a fun party, as is the marathon. Have you watched anything, my friend?
I am knee deep in this Netflix documentary, The Cold War and the Bomb, which is very dense. It's 10 hours long, not for everybody, but I am a history buff, so I am eating it up. I've watched the first two episodes. Can't wait to watch the rest.
So, and we didn't talk about this before. If you're knee deep, I'm neck deep. I'm actually head deep, and then I'm done. I finished them all. I binged them all. I went full on. The Turning Point series is often really, really good. It's often a whole lot more in terms of, this is kind of, not a rehashing, because the reality is what the reality is. Turning Point, for me, usually gives a little bit more clarity as to what's going on. But it's a wonderful, like you said, look back and look forward. Really interesting things, especially in light of the Oppenheimer phenomenon and all that kind of stuff. That was fun to see. And it goes all the way up to present day and Putin and all that kind of stuff. It's a little slanted here and there. I think it's good. I really enjoyed it. I think you'll enjoy the rest of it as it continues on. So I'm with you on that. The other thing I watched was a Nick Cage movie, Dream Scenario. Did you see this movie?
I did not.
Okay. It's billed as a lot of Nick Cage movies are, as a dark comedy. It's a very strange movie, as a lot of Nick Cage movies are. The comedy part of the dark comedy, I don't see a whole lot of it. As a matter of fact, it's much more disturbing and weird and really kind of cuts off at the end. So it seems like an unfleshed out type of movie that could have been really, really good, and yet it's just adequate. So not necessarily a thumbs down, because he's good in it and the acting's good in it, and it's an interesting premise in terms of, I'm not giving anything away, but this mild-mannered, everyday husband and father and professor starts to inhabit the dreams of everybody around the world. And craziness ensues. He gets canceled. He gets vilified and all that kind of stuff. And it's not as funny as it probably could have been. And ends, like I said, really abruptly. So before we go on, Mossy, I want to do something here. Do you know where Micronesia is?
I do not.
Okay, so I want to make sure that I get this right. Micronesia is a group of, well, there's lots of islands, but four main islands over there in the West Pacific. And the Federated States of Micronesia Football Association, the head coach of Micronesia, Dave Johnson, got a hold of me and wanted to, you know, send me some stuff. And so he ended up sending me their jerseys here. I want to hold them up for people that are watching here. I got one here. You know, they're very interesting and they're very colorful and they're very, you know, Pacific, if you will, a bunch of different things. I really appreciate him sending me out these things and, you know, letting me know about this really interesting history when it comes to Micronesia. The last time that the national team of these islands played together was back in 2015 in the Pacific Games. And in their three group stage games, Mossy, they lost 114-0, which included the last game of that group stage, a 46-0 loss to Vanuatu. Now, they disbanded after that, and until 2003 when they did something called the Micro Cup, and they're looking to come back here in the late summer of 2024. And I'll give a plug out there for those. If you want to get some of these jerseys out there and support what is going on over there with Micronesia, it's Stings, S-T-I-N-G-Z .co out there if you want a link. Or they've partnered up with a nonprofit. It starts with the shoes.org.
What was the expected goals in that 46th?
Well, it's, I mean, look, I love the fact that there are all of these different countries, and I know we deal a lot of times with top-level stuff out there, but, you know, we talked to Thomas Rongen about his incredible experience and stuff like that. There is so much soccer that goes on around the world that gets very little noticed and certainly very little when it comes to revenue and money in order to do what they are doing. So if you are into the Micronesia world of football, and even if you're not, and you just want to support something that's maybe thousands of miles away, but it's for a good cause, check out that kind of stuff. And we'll see now that they're coming back into existence, if they can build upon and improve upon losing 114-0 in terms of the goals, or losing 46-0 in terms of one type of game. So thank you to Coach Dave Johnson out there. I wish you luck on and off the field with what's going on out there in Micronesia. You ready to light this candle, my friend?
Let's do it.
Where should we start?
We begin with the U.S. men's national team, who are about to take part in the Nations League Final Four. On Thursday, they face Jamaica. Then Sunday, it will be either Mexico or Panama, hopefully in the final rather than the third place game. The U.S. chasing a third straight CONCACAF Nations League title. There's some roster news we'll get to in a minute. But first off, overall thoughts on this upcoming week for the U.S. national team?
I think that we've talked about how important this summer is for this national team, how important it is for Greg Berhalter in terms of making us believe that this is a team that is worthy of giving our heart and soul going forward. And more importantly, making us believe that it is heading in the right direction towards 2026. And if it were not to go well this summer, the ramifications for Greg Berhalter, and I guess from a national perspective on how we feel about this team. These next two games, and I mentioned this on the pod last week, they're not a true test of what this team is, because ultimately this team has been made and has been sold in terms of beating and competing with the elites out there in the world. And with all due respect to Jamaica, that is not an elite, nor is Panama or even Mexico in terms of being at the top echelon of teams out there that we want to beat, because then we can win a men's World Cup. You know, having said that, this is yet another opportunity to have that moment of glory, to have the money shot of the confetti come down, the music coming, and winning a trophy, albeit in a CONCACAF that we have dominated and have for many, many years, and probably will continue to do so. But it's still, I think, important to teach this group, as it continues to evolve, how to go into these types of games, how to be clinical and ruthless, even when you are in the superior and favorite position, and get the job done so that you can have that moment at the end in terms of raising up a trophy.
As for the roster news, both Luca Della Torre and Josh Sargent drop out due to injury. They've been replaced by Brendan Aaronson and Haji Wright. It's such a shame for Sargent, because he had scored again this past weekend for Norwich in their 3-0 away win over Stoke City in the championship. But the two players who come in, also coming off strong weekends for their clubs, Brendan Aaronson started and scored for Union Berlin in their 2-1 Bundesliga win over Werder Bremen. And Haji Wright scored a stoppage time winner for Coventry in their FA Cup quarterfinal victory over Wolves. Let me start there first. Haji Wright over Brandon Vasquez. Your thoughts?
I mean, again, it's all subjective and it's all about personal preference. And when I think when Greg Berhalter looked at who's the next man up or who's the next comp, I think he looked at Haji Wright as much better than, well, not much better, but a better option than Brendan Aaronson. I don't know. Or sorry, than Vasquez over there. And I don't know what Vasquez has to do, but I'm okay with this because Greg Berhalter, when he made this roster, when it came out, he talked about how difficult the decisions were. And that's a good thing. It's a good thing to have multiple options. It's a good thing when some really good quality players aren't able to be picked. And it shows the depth when these players do get hurt. And now you're replacing them with a lot of players that people said, hey, they should be here going forward. So I got no problem here ultimately with the replacement players. I would like to see Brandon Vasquez get an opportunity. And I think if he continues doing what he's doing, he will. Greg Berhalter has said the doors are not closed to anybody. And again, he has this depth that he is able to point to. The Josh Sargent thing in particular is sad because of, I think Josh Sargent is a very different player now coming into the national team than he was, as a lot of these players that were so young when they first burst on the scene. And it would have been interesting, and it still will be, because I think he's still going to come back, but it's just a pity that he's not going to be involved in this.
I will say, in terms of roster composition, Haji Wright does make some sense, because although we talk about him a lot as a center forward, he's actually played mostly as a winger for Coventry this season. So now you look at it, you do have four wingers in the squad, which you didn't have before. Pulisic, Weah, Brendan Aaronson, and Haji Wright. Two center forwards, Pepe and Balogun. And I think Malik Tillman, who was initially listed as a forward, now becomes that backup number 10 to Gio. And then you have four central midfielders, Musa McKinney, Tyler Adams, and Johnny Cardoso. So it does positionally make sense.
But you got Gio who can play in the wing
too, though. Yeah, there's some flexibility there. So he could have brought in Vasquez and they would have been fine. But nevertheless, if you're just looking for a starter and a backup at each position, you do have that now.
It's fine. And I know we're nitpicking right now. I think Vasquez, like I've said time and time again, he brings a different type of player to this team, and something that might be useful going forward, whether it's in these next two games or this summer. Where should we go now?
Well, when you did your projected lineup on Wednesday, you had Balogun up front. Ricardo Pepi this past weekend came on late, scored the winner for PSV over FC 20, assisted by Malik Tillman, by the way. Are you second guessing that at all, or you still think Balogun will get first crack at it?
I mean, unless he just looks like a shell of himself in, I mean, it's going to be limited training, but whatever training that they do have, no, I think that he is going to get the benefit of the doubt, be the incumbent. I don't think, Greg Berhalter doesn't strike me as someone who is going to just simply play the hot hand to play the hot hand. I also don't think that Greg Berhalter, maybe he shares this with me, in that his view on a player isn't going to be drastically changed simply because they are in a good or a bad vein of form.
Pulisic, by the way, scored again for AC Milan in their 3-1 away win over Verona. He scored in four straight games now.
Fine.
And I was thinking about this. For so long when he was at Chelsea, we worried about his club situation impacting his national team form. Now you're hoping his club form carries over to the national team.
I mean, yeah, I guess. But again, it goes back to all things being equal, yeah, you want players playing, you want them healthy, and if they're goal scorers or attacking player, you want them being dangerous and scoring goals. So it's a good thing. But again, if he wasn't scoring or wasn't playing, it doesn't preclude him from coming in and starring for the national team. Now, I know there's a mental part of it that you want, but Christian Pulisic is a great player. Full stop. And I think he's going to come in. And yes, he's playing really, really well, but I think he'll be the first person to tell you that, yeah, it's a different type of environment. And sometimes that environment and that change of environment is good just to get out of whatever crap that you're going through. And sometimes it's a drastic type of change, and you step on the field and you go to that well, and it's dried up in this instance and in this circumstance.
Now, the flip side of that coin, both Gio Reyna and Matt Turner unused subs for Nottingham Forest this past weekend against Luton Town. Forest, by the way, were docked points today because of financial fair play, so they're now in the relegation zone. But Gio has played a total of 40 minutes since going there. This loan has been a disaster, while Turner has only started one match in the last 6 weeks. Are you worried about their inactivity?
No. As I said before, and we're going to talk more about it in our Ask Alexi segment about the Gio Reyna decision. And, you know, we talked about it last week, and so I'll just reiterate for those that heard or didn't hear. Gio Reyna is obviously, in the eyes of Greg Berhalter, a quality and talented player that he feels can help this team win, and therefore he feels can help him, Greg Berhalter, keep his job. And that hasn't changed despite the absolute disaster and failure of a loan that this has been. And here's a situation where, and I know the U.S. Soccer Federation tweeted out a picture of Gio Reyna, and he was smiling from ear to ear as he arrived into camp. And it's understandable because he's coming into, you know, take away all the craziness that happened with him, but he's still coming into a place that now, even more so, obviously values him, probably much more so than both of the teams that he has been with over the last year, and a comfort level that I think can possibly get the best out of him. And who knows, this might be this brigadoonish type of existence for him where he can come in and again show why so many people are paying attention to him and then go back to the crap that he is in and try to figure that out.
Bournemouth did not play this past weekend. So those 20-something minutes that Tyler Adams featured in the middle of last week against Luton Town are his only action since September. Let me ask you this. 5 minutes in against Jamaica, McKinney or Musa pulls a muscle and has to come off. Is it Tyler Adams or Johnny that subs on? Do you think Tyler is only there as an emergency to get him back acclimated with the group, but he's really somebody that Greg Berhalter would rather not use in these two games?
I do think that Tyler Adams, it's an accommodation and a fair one for such an important player. And you know Tyler Adams is going to be there in the end, but you get him back into the national team. And I think it's much more about the mental state of Tyler Adams to say, hey, this is your home. This is your family. And we love the fact that you are back training. And, you know, Tyler Adams, I don't think that he can gradually get into anything. But I still think that if in your example there, if that happens, yeah, I think your boy Johnny's going in.
And the Jamaica game will be...
And that's okay, by the way. That's okay, yeah. Given the player that he is.
The Jamaica game will be a good opportunity for Joe Scally at right back. Because as everybody knows, Serginho Dest is suspended for that match.
Yes, that will be Joe Scally's opportunity to prove that he is the backup to Serginho Dest.
Jamaica, by the way, pretty shorthanded between injuries, suspensions, and disciplinary issues. They're minus some of their best players. Leon Bailey, Shamar Nicholson, Damari Gray, Ethan Pinnock, Amari Bell will all not play against the U.S. You have Andre Blake in goal, Mikel Antonio up front, a few other names of note. But looking at their projected lineup, this is a game the U.S. should win comfortably.
Yes. Well, they should win even with the full lineup of Jamaica. But, you know, from a practical perspective, or I guess from a tournament perspective and what we talked about earlier, the trophy perspective, that's a good thing. And it makes it that much more easier to get to the final. The problem is, and we've talked about this time and time again, this is a team that needs every opportunity to be challenged as it gets ready for not just this summer, but more importantly, 2026. And I fear that this is going to be yet another wasted 90 minutes. No, it's not anybody's fault. It's just the reality of the situation. But more and more of these game windows and these opportunities that get wasted, it's less and less an opportunity to test ourselves against an equal and hopefully better team going forward, because this team is not going to get better playing against inferior opposition.
And we should mention this is all taking place at AT&T Stadium in Arlington, Texas, both semifinals and the final on Sunday. So that's where the U.S. will be playing their next two games. A venue, obviously, that thought it might host the World Cup final in 2026, but it was not to be.
It's still going to get 9 games. So a lot of the 2026 World Cup is going to happen in Dallas. I will be jetting out there. Not jetting. I mean, I wish. On Wednesday, and I'll be there from Wednesday and Thursday. I'll be going to the game. Again, a reminder on Friday on X, Friday morning, X out there on the Spaces thing over there. You can join us live and you can react to the result of the U.S.-Jamaica game. And if you're not there, if you don't join us live, it'll show up in your feed too. So we'll definitely have a bunch of content coming out. We also have a special midweek interview that I think you're going to like when it comes to the stuff that you will find in your feed. But yeah, I'm going to head out to Dallas. And when I say Dallas, I mean Arlington, and see what that whole venue is going to look like. And obviously, hopefully a win leading us to the final against either Panama or Mexico.
One more note on the U.S. national team. I know you love a kit launch.
Yeah. You know, we talked about this before, and so now it is official. And, you know, again, ultimately, the way a kit, jersey, uniform, whatever you want to call it, the way that it is looked is often relative to how successful you are in it. But, you know, again, I love the fact that this is, I guess, unisex in that all of our teams, whether it's the United States men's team, the United States women's team, whether it's our Paralympic team, all of our different national teams out there at all ages will be wearing this. I think the white one is, it's one thing to be crisp and clean and simple. It's another thing to be boring. And this is just a white canvas. Now, if there was an opportunity to put something on that canvas, that would be great. So I when I see the team on the field, I want to say that's America. I want it to look like America. I want it to scream America. I want you to lean into the red, white, and blue and the stars and stripes. Now, the blue one, and if you're watching, you can see the different national team players wearing it. The blue one is interesting in that they're trying for some stuff. However, the red at the bottom of the blue is going to get lost when you tuck it into your shirt. And so it's just going to be kind of trim and an afterthought. And I know it's easy from the outside. And there are men and women that work long and hard and have all the data to back them up as to why they're doing this. And I'm sure they'll sell a lot of them. But I just don't understand why we can't just be overtly and completely and unabashedly American in what we do. We have red, white, and blue, and we have stars and stripes. And even the white one, just put a huge American flag across the chest. And I'm good with that. At least that's something. If this is this canvas from which to do anything that you want, then I choose to put an American flag across my breast when I'm running around.
Stu Holden chimed in on X, and he had an interesting suggestion hearkening back to the famous 1950 team.
Yeah.
And Stu said, why not a more updated version of that jersey?
Yeah, we've done a sash in the past, and we've done some retro types of things. And yeah, this would be good. The look back in order to go forward is an interesting thing. I think that I will say this again. It saddens and angers me if the reason that we are not being, I guess, more American in terms of our aesthetic out there is because people are afraid of that. If that's where we've gotten, then all is lost. But yeah, I mean, Stu, that's an interesting suggestion, and that would be kind of cool. But again, just make it look American and don't apologize for it.
This might be the first ever Stu Holden post that's been well received on this podcast.
Well, yeah, it happens. But by the way, if you look up at Stu Holden's actual, what do you call those things? The picture avatar, right? Guess what he's wearing? Denim. No. Denim with the stars. Okay? Now that's American.
One last note on this international window. We're also going to find out the last two teams in the Copa America on Saturday at Toyota Stadium in Frisco, Texas. Canada will face Trinidad and Tobago. Honduras will battle Costa Rica. The winners of those games qualify for the Copa America. The Canada TNT winner slots in the group with Argentina, Chile, and Peru. The Honduras-Costa Rica winner slots in the group with Brazil, Colombia, and Paraguay. We're also going to find out the last three teams for the Euros. All those playoff matches take place during this window. We're covering one of them on FS1 next Tuesday, March 26th. We don't know which one yet. And then there are also some tasty friendlies, including England-Brazil at Wembley on Saturday. That's live on Fox. You'll be part of that coverage.
Yeah, the reason why I won't be staying to what hopefully is a U.S. final in the CONCACAF Nations League is because I'm coming back and we're doing the Brazil game. You, Are you excited about that, my friend?
I am not.
You're not.
We're going to get pummeled. Because
we know you're real down on your Brazil team.
Yes.
That could be my first comment when we come on air, is to, you know, reference you and how pessimistic and down and dour and negative you are on this Brazilian team as we head into not just this friendly against England, but also this summer when they come to our shores for Copa America. All right, where should we go now?
That is it.
All right, let's take another quick break. And when we come back, some interesting stuff going on in terms of results here and abroad.
This is a special alert to all Americans who own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles, with an auto warranty about to expire, or with no warranty coverage at all. With summer quickly approaching, CarShield is offering a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that is available to the public to save any driver out-of-pocket expenses on future auto repairs. Call now to find out how you can pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs, like AC parts and check engine light mysteries. See why CarShield is voted America's most trusted vehicle protection company, and see why our commitment to our customers has landed us an A rating with the Better Business Bureau. We have live reps here to answer all your questions. Drivers who are covered will not have to pay for covered repairs again. This protection plan is at an all-time low. Additionally, drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Visit us for your free quick quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio. What do you have to lose? Visit carshield.com/audio.
Okay, welcome back. Mossy, some incredible games this weekend. Where to start?
Well, I mentioned in the opening segment that Haji Wright scored the winner for Coventry in their FA Cup quarterfinal victory over Wolves. Coventry will face Manchester United in the FA Cup semis. United advanced this past weekend thanks to a thrilling 4-3 extra time victory over Liverpool. This was a crazy game. Liverpool led 2-1 late in regulation. Antony equalized, not the Portland Timbers Antony, the other one. So we went to extra time. Harvey Elliott made it 3-2 Liverpool, then Rashford 3-3, and Diallo 4-3. Old Trafford went bananas. Manchester United moving on. What a game.
Oh, wonderful game. And keep in mind that, you know, from a Liverpool perspective, they're trying for the quadruple? Is that what's happening here?
Correct.
Oh, my goodness. All right. So this is FA Cup, right? This is the Open Cup, if you will. All of the different teams vying, romance, all that kind of stuff, right?
Correct.
This was a great game. This was a fun game, regardless of happens FA Cup or any place else. This was a fun game to watch. And, you know, there was a feeling of inevitability from a Liverpool perspective. And then everything got turned on its head. And what Liverpool is this year, and I guess what Manchester United isn't this year, and many people looking at this from a Manchester United perspective as to where they can, put all of their eggs, and they can really look at, hey, this is something special. And it was special in terms of the game. The Diallo goal at the end, right? He'd already had a yellow card, scores a goal, takes off his shirt, gets his second yellow card, so actually has to finish the game walking down the tunnel. Luckily for him, it held. Now, this goal is interesting for a number of different reasons, not the least of which is Jurgen Klopp, right? One of the great minds and managers in the world, right?
Correct.
It's 3-3. There's a corner. Liverpool has a corner. And I get wanting to win the game. I get wanting to go for it. But it's insane how wide open they left themselves for this counter that Manchester United said, well, that's fine. You're going to do that? That's great. It was almost as if, like, Liverpool thought they had to score in order to go on. And that obviously was not the case. So it is a little strange, but this is as much about what Liverpool didn't do as what Manchester United did.
After we're done taping, you can ask Zach Kenworthy about that, whether Klopp got it wrong at the end of the game.
It's not often where you say Klopp got it wrong. By the way, did you see him? He was angry at the end of the game. You know, the all likable Jurgen Klopp when they're winning. It's all wonderful and everybody's great and the world needs now is love, sweet love, and all that kind of stuff. Boy, that changes real quick when it goes against you and you had it in the palm of your hand and gotten taken away.
Yeah, some Danish reporter, I think it was, asked him why Liverpool didn't have more energy during the extra time. And Klopp said, well, do you know how many games we've played? And then the reporter shot back, so you're blaming this loss on the amount of games? And Klopp didn't like that and stormed off.
It's a legitimate question. and he could have, you know, done it differently. I get it. You're emotional, and it's the reporter got exactly what he wanted. Let's be honest. You kind of are baiting players or players and coaches in those post games types of things, and a lot of times it's just good Lord willing, help the ball club and all that kind of stuff. So when you do get a real, true, emotional type of response and a real human type of response, especially from someone like Jurgen Klopp, who is so revered and rightly so, and is always seems to have perspective and is so positive, it's an interesting juxtaposition.
Elsewhere in the FA Cup, City beat Newcastle 2-0 and Chelsea beat Leicester 4-2. So City-Chelsea is the other semifinal. You know, last year was the first time ever that Manchester City and Manchester United met in the FA Cup final. City 1-2-1 en route to completing a treble. So we had to wait 150 years or so for those two to meet in a final. And now we might get it again for a second year in a row, because I expect United to beat Coventry and I expect City to beat Chelsea. So I think we're headed for another Manchester derby in the FA Cup final.
Right. So one of these kids is not like the other, right? So Coventry, congratulations. Take your plaudits now. But Haji Wright, you know.
He might have something to say about
we'll
that.
We'll see.
Speaking of Manchester City, on Friday we had the UEFA Champions League quarterfinal draw, which also laid out the bracket for the rest of the competition. We know who would face who in the semis. And the glamour tie, Real Madrid-Manchester City in a battle of the last two champions. Also on that side of the bracket, Arsenal-Bayern Munich. And then on the other side of the bracket, PSG-Barcelona, Atletico Madrid-Dortmund.
Oh. Well, we talked last week about how it's, you know, Super League, but part of the appeal of a Super League is that these are delicious elite teams actually facing each other. And you had mentioned last week that Dortmund is kind of being framed as the little engine that could Cinderella team, right?
Yeah. Just to go through the meet. Now, we'll have multiple pods between now and when the games are played, so we can really dig into it then. But PSG-Barcelona, storylines abound. Barcelona fans hate PSG because they stole Neymar, they stole Messi. Last summer, they stole Ousmane Dembele. This is Luis Enrique versus Xavi. A lot of Champions League history. Barcelona got him in 13, 15, and 17. 17 being the crazy comeback. PSG got him in 21, Mbappe scoring a hat trick in the first leg of that tie. Do you have a lean one way or the other here?
PSG.
I lean Barcelona. They've got a little something going on right now. They won 3-0 away to Atletico Madrid this past weekend in La Liga. They're playing their best football of the season. Lewandowski on fire. So I slightly lean Barcelona, but it's close.
Do you think that, I mean, he's playing, but he's not going to be subbed out or anything like that. Do you think that Mbappe is more or less motivated in a game like this against Barcelona, given where he's going next year?
Oh, it makes him even more motivated.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Do you think that Mbappe feels a sense of responsibility to PSG as he's going out? And maybe like, as I leave, I am giving you this
yes.
that you have craved for so long?
The absolute dream scenario for him is to go out winning the Champions League for PSG, and then they can't have any animosity towards him leaving. Then he can go to Real Madrid and
doing it where the other stars have left. So it's kind of all on his watch.
Absolutely.
Oh,
yes.
Can you imagine, mon ami?
Atletico Madrid, Dortmund. I lean Atletico Madrid in that one.
Yep, me too.
Arsenal, Bayern Munich. I've gone back and forth on this one. I think Arsenal pound for pound is probably the better team, but Bayern have all the pedigree in this competition, and they have Harry Kane, whose numbers against Arsenal are fantastic from his Tottenham days. I don't know. This one to me is a 50-50. Which way are you leaning?
I'm going Bayern. I'm going Bayern. Eggs in one basket, you know, kind of redemption or, you know, for what has obviously been a bad league season.
And then Real Madrid, Manchester City. I'm going City. I think the order of the matches is crucial here. The first leg at the Bernabeu and then the second leg at the Etihad. That Real Madrid magic in the Champions League really comes into play when they get to decide a tie at home. Case in point, 2 years ago in the semis, they eliminated City in miraculous fashion en route to lifting the trophy. The second leg was at the Bernabeu. Then last season, when the two teams met again in the semis, second leg was at the Etihad. City won 4-0, took it 5-1 on aggregate en route to lifting the trophy themselves. This time around in the quarter, second leg Etihad again. So I think that tilts it Man City's way.
All right. Yeah. Okay. I can buy that. I'll go with that.
That's Jude Bellingham versus Erling Haaland, the two former Dortmund guys. Pep versus Ancelotti.
I want to go Real Madrid, though. Okay. I can be convinced on Man City, but I'm going to hold off for a little bit. In the next couple of shows, I'll go one way or the other.
Incidentally, the Europa League has some juice too. That quarterfinal draw took place, and the matchups there: AC Milan versus Roma in an all-Italian affair. Then on the same side of that bracket, Leverkusen, West Ham. Then on the other side, you've got Liverpool, Atalanta, and Benfica, Marseille. We've got a shot at a Liverpool-Leverkusen final, which would be very interesting with the whole Xabi Alonso dynamic, or Liverpool-AC Milan, perhaps. Keep in mind, that final is in Dublin. If Liverpool are in it, I could definitely see Dublin native Keith Costigan making the trip.
This is the NIT tournament, right?
Correct.
Okay, I don't care. Next.
And I should say, the UEFA Champions League final is at Wembley Stadium.
Oh, okay, good.
Another competition that has very juicy quarterfinal matchups is the CONCACAF Champions Cup. When we taped our last pod on Wednesday, we were commiserating over the fact that the previous night, Pachuca and Tigres had eliminated Philadelphia and Orlando City. Then on Thursday of last week, Monterrey beat Cincinnati 2-1 to complete a 3-1 aggregate triumph. Brandon Vasquez scoring in both legs against his former team. So Liga MX went 3-0 against MLS in the round of 16. We have three more Liga MX versus MLS matchups in the quarterfinals now. Inter Miami, Monterrey, Club America, New England, and Columbus Tigres. Do you think MLS will fare any better in this round?
So when this was written down and put in front of me, you know, I was Eeyore. I was like, man, this is bad. And it was bad in terms of the scores, the way it all went down, and obviously multiple MLS teams going out. But then when you look at it here, where you have three MLS teams, and when it comes to Columbus, I think it certainly can be argued it's the best team in MLS. And I know Inter Miami would have a say, but Inter Miami's in there too. In New England, from an MLS perspective, we'll talk a little bit more of that later, isn't doing great. But maybe they can conjure something up here. It's not as bad as I thought it was in the moment, because I have faith, in particular, in Columbus and Inter Miami. Maybe not so much in New England to find a way through at least the semifinals.
Keep in mind, in all three of those ties, the second leg is in Mexico, but it wasn't supposed to be that way for Club America New England. New England, based on the seeding, should have hosted the second leg, but there's some motocross event at Gillette Stadium the night of the second leg, so they had to flip the order. That really hurts, having to decide it at the Azteca rather than at Gillette Stadium.
Yeah, it sucks, but it's the reality of...
You have no regard for motorsports, so that must drive you crazy.
Oh, no, I love motorsports. What I do love is contractual obligations. And obviously, the crafts up there with Gillette, you know, they program their stadium and they put as many events in there as they possibly can in terms of their business, and they couldn't change this one. So, and they'll have a big old crowd out there, so there's nothing you can do. But from a competitive perspective, it puts New England in the sh-.
That's the one where I give the MLS team the least chance. I think Club America are solid favorites there, and keep in mind, they're on the same side of the bracket as Pachuca Herediano, and I expect Pachuca to win that. So I think we're going to have an all-Mexican semifinal there, which would guarantee a Mexican finalist. But I agree with you. Columbus Tigres is a 50-50, and Inter Miami, I would say, are favorites against Monterrey or anybody else they face. I think Inter Miami are the favorites to win this competition.
Oh, I like it. I like it, Mossy. All right, where should we go now?
Next up, we go to MLS, where we had a very eventful weekend. And what we're going to do is we're going to have you identify your winners and losers from this weekend. Beginning with a winner, you have Chicago, who earned a crazy 4-3 victory over Montreal in one of the wildest endings in MLS history.
Look, if you have seen this, then you know what we're talking about here. And if you haven't, it is insane. We all know that Chicago is the Windy City. Well, there was a mighty wind at the end. And this game, it should never have happened. But that it did is just wonderful. Kellen Acosta of the Chicago Fire, 3-3. Chicago had come back against Montreal. He sends this one up into orbit. But he also sends it up into the wind of Chicago coming off of the lake. And it gets caught up in some audacious wind. And unfortunately for Montreal, It goes up, up, and over and into the actual net. Now, Kellen Acosta is, I think, a very, very good player. There's not a chance in hell he was shooting this. He's doing what everybody does at the end of the game when you're desperate to possibly win the game. You put it in the mixer, you throw it up into a dangerous situation, and you take your chances. This was an insane goal. Very, very important for Frank Klopas, however it came about, to win at home, obviously, to get a win with this Chicago team in this type of situation. And who knows? They might kick on to more when it comes to what, you know, maybe this is what they needed. It was interesting, and you can time and time again look at things that happened over this weekend. You know, how so many people immediately, when I posted this over there on X and, you know, social media, used it to denigrate what MLS is, what MLS goalkeepers are. Yes, this was a goalkeeping mistake. All right. Goalkeeping mistakes happen every single day of the week in every single league, every single week and every single month and every single year and every single season out there. This was, like I said, a wild goal, and it went viral. But the winners, when I talk about winners, and it's just kind of big winners, and it doesn't even necessarily have to do with winning the game or not winning the game. But when it comes to big winners, I think Chicago, for not just the fact that they won, but the way in which they won. And congratulations. Montreal was not happy about the way it all came down, but that's usually what happens when you lose a game.
Another one of your winners is Inter Miami, 3-1 away victory over DC United. Messi did not play due to injury. Luis Suarez did not start, but he came on as a sub and scored two goals in the second half. After Inter Miami's first couple of games this season, you had proclaimed Luis Suarez a problem. He's now up to 6 goals and 5 assists in all competitions. You want to take this opportunity to apologize to El Pistolero?
Hell no. You know, his, excuse me, his bum knees are evident. His physical abilities are, I think, valid and fair to be questioned going forward in the long term. However, the dude scores goals. He understands what movement or what limit movement he needs to make, and he is efficient in that movement. I think more importantly, and this is why Miami, I think, is the big winner, is one of my big winners, is that they proved that they can win without Messi. Do it on the road. And yes, Suarez coming off of the bench is a nice player to have. But I think it's important for their mentality to be able to say, you know what, we can go in and we can play a good team. And BC is a good team, not a great team, but a good team, and find a way to get a result. It was interesting, yet again, you know, I mentioned the crazy goal in Chicago. It was interesting, yet again, that now people are using the Suarez goals and his prolific right now, at least in the short term, goal scoring prowess as yet another example of why MLS sucks. And it's a retirement league. And the fact that Luis Suarez can be scoring goals here is obviously an indictment against what MLS is and what MLS isn't going forward. Miami doesn't care, nor should they. He's a historic goal scorer, but I'm certainly not going to apologize because, and I'm not hoping for this, but his physical abilities, that is a problem. But if they're just going to use him in this sporadic type of capacity, maybe they can mitigate some of that over the long term.
You know, World Soccer Talk wrote a piece. I must confess, I did not read the actual article, but the headline
That's
seemed to hint
for the
that
course it, for World Soccer
yeah,
Talk.
It was about them being unhappy that Messi is missing these MLS games and prioritizing Argentina, yeah. And the communication hasn't been great. And then Tom Bogert went after World Soccer Talk, said this was a ridiculous take and just exposed their anti-MLS agenda, and they're trying to create a problem where there isn't one. Nevertheless, Messi did miss another MLS game this past weekend. How did that hit you?
I don't think, you know, I'm a capitalist. Buyer beware. Do your research. Recognize that this is sports and players play, players don't play. You know, I've talked about Don Garber and his comments relative to Messi. It is kind of rich that, you know, he took people to task about all the other stories that aren't being told, and it's all about Messi. Well, your own league and your teams, whether it's Inter Miami or any of the other teams out there, are using Messi to sell more tickets, to bring more attention, as they should, and that's understandable. You know, the fact that he's not playing, it is interesting in that Messi over the years has been pretty reliable and pretty rugged relative to injuries, and they have, you know, they've raced that horse. And here Tata, for the first time in real history, we're seeing real kid gloves. And part of it is the fact that, and Tata will be the first person to say this, he wants to play. He wants to be out on the field. And so, you know, maybe we're seeing a different Messi being able to look long-term, be able to say, you know what, in order for the good of this full season, I can't be playing every single game. It's a little disappointing, and certainly disappointing for people that buy tickets to possibly see Messi play when they don't get that reward. But Tata Martino's job is not to sell tickets. Tata Martino's job is to win as many games as possible. And as long as he is doing that, whatever decisions he is making relative to Messi, he has the prerogative to do so. And so far, it's all going as he's planned it.
Inter Miami level on points with Columbus atop the East. Columbus hammered the Red Bulls 3-0. You have the Red Bulls as one of your losers from this weekend.
In that it was from start to finish. And look, there is no shame losing to what I feel is the best team right now in Major League Soccer, which is Columbus. However, the way in which the Red Bulls capitulated, I looked at it as a dramatic backstep, if you will, from a Red Bulls team that this year, you know, I think, and it's still early days, but this was an absolute ass whooping from start to finish. And Red Bulls, who, to be fair, are one of the few teams that has an established identity. Whether you agree with it or not, that's irrelevant. But they talk the talk, and more importantly, they walk the walk when it comes to how they want to play. And this Red Bull team, in the way that they played against Columbus, they were torn apart, my friend. It was an absolute bloodbath. And it shows how good Columbus is. And I think in the week where we pick winners and losers, not only did they lose the game, but the way in which they lost the game, that's why I put the New York Red Bulls, because I expect more from them.
A game that features one of your winners and one of your losers, Minnesota 2-0 at home over LAFC, Lod and Longwani with the goals. The Loons atop the West, LAFC all the way down in 10th place.
I don't think anybody expected, given the offseason of the Minnesota United with, you know, the search for a head coach, and head coach not arriving until until the season started, and with the drama with Reynosa and all that kind of stuff, I don't think anybody expected the Loons to be sitting on top. But this is what MLS is. It enables you to do things that are unexpected. And they are absolutely one of my winners, because they have defied expectations and they are in some rarefied Loon air right now. And it's fun to see. Do they know how it's happening? Maybe, maybe not. Really doesn't matter whether they do or not. They are going to ride this, and there will be ups and downs throughout the season. But I think it shows what MLS is, but I also think it shows what Minnesota has at least started out this season being.
Austin, Philly 2-2. Austin winless through four games, and they are one of your losers.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Josh Wolf, when it comes to this game within the game, where we are assessing coaches and who's on the hot seat, I think it's getting hot in Austin, and it has been hot, and I guess even hotter. You know, Philadelphia is traditionally a very good team. I think that there are some questions this year as to how good this Philadelphia team is relative to past great Philadelphia teams. And so squandering the 3 points and a vital 3 points at home, again, for Austin, I don't think that that is a, I don't think that's good for the team, obviously, but I also don't think that it's good for Josh Wolf going forward. So, yeah, they are definitely one of my losers when it comes to this weekend.
The refereeing controversy of the weekend took place late in the Galaxy St. Louis game. St. Louis scored a go-ahead goal on a play where lots of people thought there should have been a foul on the Galaxy keeper, McCarthy, including Sean Sullivan, by the way. He put in the rundown, terrible non-call. The Galaxy did come back and equalize through Yoshida, so it finished 3-3. Nevertheless, that play generating a lot of conversation.
We've talked about this before. The protection that goalkeepers in the game, and this is not just the modern game. This has happened for decades. Is nuts. They are afforded a level of protection that I think goes beyond. These are players who, unlike everybody else around them, not only do they have this protection, but they have the advantage of using their hands. They have the advantage of coming out and at times doing things physically that any other player in any other part of the field would not only be called for a foul, but would possibly be given yellow cards or red cards. The amount of times that goalkeepers come out and just completely clean house is amazing. I'm not necessarily against that, but they are so protected. And yet in this instance, when players are allowed to challenge for the ball, it used to drive me nuts when I used to outjump a goalkeeper. Again, a goalkeeper who can use his or her hands. And I would outjump the goalkeeper. And just the mere fact that somebody had outjumped in a duel a goalkeeper was enough for referees to blow the whistle because they can't fathom that that could possibly happen. Here we have a situation in the box where all sorts of stuff is going on. Most of it goes uncalled. And again, you are a goalkeeper. You got to come out. And you got to make yourself big. And again, you have that advantage both in terms of the physical abilities and the laws that are on your side and the way that the game is refereed. I have no sympathy. I didn't understand this. For Sean to put this as a terrible no call, I completely disagree with him. Love Sean, but we can respectfully disagree on this.
That's why he's a producer and not a pundit in your eyes.
Well, no, he's much more than a producer. He is a friend, and he's an incredible thinker when it comes to the game. He's just incredibly wrong when it comes to this particular play.
Last thing, the NWSL season got underway this past weekend.
Yes, the NWSL season got underway. A special shout out to Bay FC, their first ever game. And not only is that their first ever game, but they get their first ever win. And not only do they get their first ever win, but they get it in Los Angeles against the darlings, Angel FC. They get a 1-0 win. Congratulations to all of the players. Congratulations to all of the staff. Congratulations to all of our friends and colleagues that are part of the ownership group out there, whether it's Allie Wagner or Danielle Slayton or Leslie Osborne, all of the different folks out there. It's just it's a wonderful way to start a season. They still got plenty of work out there. Brandy Chastain, they got a good group of people up there. And they should celebrate this because there will be ups and downs going on. But I just wanted to make sure that I shouted out what was going on over there. Can I say something, Mossy, before we go about the referee situation in MLS?
Sure.
I fear, for those that have been paying any attention, right now it continues to drag on in that MLS is using replacement referees. You can call them scrubs, you can call them scabs, you can call them whatever, but they are using replacement referees. And I fear, Mossy, that while they certainly make mistakes, it's gotten to the point now, as this is dragged along, where they are being used as kind of a catch-all and an easy out in terms of the inevitable disappointment and criticism and venom that either players or coaches or fans out there have. And, you go through, whether it's Courtois yelling about the referees after the game, whether it's Greg Vanney from the LA Galaxy after the game yelling about the referees. First off, keep in mind that even with the pro referees and the quote-unquote real referees, people scream and yell after every single game. And I just feel that they are using this situation as an excuse as to why their team lost relative to subjective calls that are made. Doesn't mean that I don't want this thing to get sorted out, and the sooner it does, the better off. But, you know, maybe the referees right now are actually in an advantageous position where the longer it goes, the more the replacement referees and this situation gets blamed for things that maybe aren't even their fault. It's just the reality of what's going on the field. All right, Masi, should we take another quick break?
Let's do it.
Let's do that and come back with some Ask Alexa.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
All right, welcome back in. It's time for Ask Alexi, that part of the show where you send your comments, questions, and concerns in. Keep in mind that our handle out there on all the social media platforms is SOTU with Alexi, or you can call into our State of the Union podcast hotline, which is 657-549-2297. That's 657-549-2297. What do we got today, Masi?
First up, we have a voicemail. Let's take a listen right now.
Hey, boys, it's Mike from Brooklyn. I love you guys, but I got to call you out, especially you, Alexei. When Greg calls up this team, this national team, for the nation semifinal and final, there's guys coming in who aren't started. In baseball, we call them bench warmers. Now, you say you're the one who said, Alexei, you have to be starting for your team if you're going to be called up for the national team. And if we're going to take this national team seriously, if we're going to say we're a top 10 team in the world, that we should be there with Argentina and Spain and France. You're telling me a guy warming up the bench at Nottingham Forest, Gio Reyna and Matt Turner, that's who's going to be starting on our team? We can't have that, Alexei. If you are going to be a top 10 team, you have to be a starter in Europe or wherever you're playing. Over and out, boys.
All right. Thank you, Mike from Brooklyn. A couple of things. Number one, I could be wrong, but I don't think I've ever said that if you are not starting, you should not be called into the national team. As a matter of fact, I think I've made the case that starting or not starting, playing or not playing, in the greater scheme of things, is going to be irrelevant. That's why I say form is fallacy. And I think I've made it very, very clear that when it comes to the national team, if you want to just put a rule, Mike, which I think is what you're arguing here, that you have to be starting, that's fine. But then what happens when Christian Pulisic isn't starting for AC Milan? You're not going to call Christian Pulisic in? See, it just doesn't work like that. Now, when it comes to Gio Reyna, you know, I can have this argument and this debate because I understand where you're coming from. However, I look at Gio Reyna and I see the way that I think Greg Berhalter and his staff look at him as this is a quality player who is going through a difficult time at his club. But that does not mean that he can't help us. That does not mean that he can't be successful in our camp with our team. Does he and everybody else want players playing and playing consistently? Yes. But I think that you are doing a disservice to the national team, and I would argue it will result in poor results if you just simply blanket it and say you have to be playing. And inevitably, a national team coach will get up there and they will skirt around it. They never say, well, you have to be playing, because that blanket doesn't work, because there are circumstances where you're not playing. You know, what if you have a really, really bad situation with your coach? It's just bad. It has nothing to do with soccer. I don't know. You... You slept with his daughter. I don't know, something crazy, whatever it ends up being, okay? You can't help the national team because he's sitting your ass on the bench? No. There's things that happen. So I disagree with you, Mike, in that Gio taking him on this roster goes against what I said, but I also disagree in terms of the way you are viewing a national team coach. I think that you are biting your nose off to spite your face if you were to just blanket something like that.
Any concern, though, that with Berhalter and Gio, because of the past history, Berhalter might be overcompensating to show that he's not biased against Gio?
Yes, there is some concern, and I think that that is an absolutely valid and fair point to bring up. But I also think that Greg Berhalter, while he certainly takes plenty of criticism, and again, very fair criticism out there, I think that people give him much more of the benefit of the doubt in that craziness and look at the actions of Gio Reyna. And so if he were to say, you know what, I'm not calling in Gio Reyna, I don't think a lot of people would be up in arms and be angry about it. I do think that this was a decision specifically as, you know what, all of these relationships, the good and the bad, ultimately it's about winning the game. I've told you this before, Mossy. It is amazing what elite athletes, or in this case, elite coaches at the highest level, can compartmentalize and will forgive and forget in an effort to win a game. I don't have to like you. I don't have to hang out with you. But I have to respect that when you get on the field, if you're a teammate, that you are going to do the things that are going to help me win. And if you are one of my players as a coach, that you are going to do the things that are going to help me win. All that other stuff is fluff. All of that other stuff is BS. It's about winning. And I think Greg Berhalter feels that with Gio Reyna, he has a better chance of winning than without him.
Next up, a question on X at DeBoer Burner asks, Alexi, where do you think the best MLS team finishes in the Prem table?
Ding, 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 ding. This is evergreen. This is catnip. We have talked about this on the pod. I feel like we do this every year because I get this question. And my answer never changes, to be quite honest with you. While MLS has improved, my answer still has always been the same, in that I think an MLS team would finish mid-table. Now, there are a lot of people. I posted this morning, and inevitably I get backlash and people screaming and yelling, and this is why you're a moron. This is why you don't have credibility. This is why American soccer doesn't have credibility. All these types of things. First off, there's no way to prove it. There's no way to do it. It is a completely subjective type of exercise. And I know there's people out there going, yeah, but you're an MLS shill. MLS does not pay me, all right? I wear my MLS love on my sleeve, for better or worse. I make no bones about it that I love this league, and it will always have a place in my heart. I don't think that necessarily blinds me to the realities of soccer when it comes to, you know, an assessment like this. And inevitably, I will come back to this. For those that are just incredulous that you could possibly say something like this, okay, what is your reasoning? And specifically, in the past I've asked this, and some people actually have done this exercise, and they have said, well, it's the difference in the first touch. At least I can get behind that because that's a legitimate argument. You say, all right, well, the first touch in the EPL is better than the first touch in MLS. All right, that may or may not be true, but at least that's an argument, as opposed to just, well, the EPL is the most popular league in the world, and therefore an MLS team couldn't possibly compete. The EPL spends X amount of dollars relative to MLS, and therefore the talent couldn't possibly compete. So there is your answer when it comes to DeBoer Burner over there on the X network. My answer has not changed. As a matter of fact, I've only become more steadfast in my belief that a team would finish mid-table.
That is it.
That's it. All right, let's take another quick break. When we come back, it's time for One for the Road. Okay, welcome back. It's the end of our show, and at the end of each and every show, I give you my One for the Road. I don't know if you've heard this, Mossy, but there's a young 14-year-old named Kevin Sullivan. You heard of him?
Yes, Freddie Adu Part 2.
Freddie Adu Part 2. All right, so Kevin Sullivan is, like I said, a 14-year-old. He plays for the Philadelphia Union's developmental team. He's also Quinn Sullivan, who you might recognize from the Philadelphia Union, his younger brother. And he is not just an American phenomenon, but a worldwide phenomenon in terms of the way people are rating him, and in terms of the teams that want his services going forward. We come to find out, Fabrizio Romano reporting that Manchester City are closing in on a deal for the American Wunderkind, Kevin Sullivan. Now, this is great news, obviously, for him. This is great news for the Philadelphia Union. More great news for the Philadelphia Union in terms of the machine that they have there and the La Masia, if you will, of the United States in terms of the development of young talent. But I was interested in the response to this because, you know, over the years, I have people tell me and argue that MLS has actually been problematic and a detriment to American soccer. I think that's ridiculous. I think it's a ludicrous accusation. And I think it bears no semblance of reality in terms of what MLS has done. Again, this is another young player, 14 years old, raised in the American soccer system, with all of its good and bad, admittedly. And this is another feather in the cap for Major League Soccer. And there are those that would argue me and said, no, he's bypassing Major League Soccer. No, he is being given these opportunities because of Major League Soccer. As I said before, I had to star in a World Cup in order to get an opportunity to go to Europe. You look at Weston McKennie and Tyler Adams and all of these different players. You know, so many of our players have been touched in a positive way by Major League Soccer and the infrastructure that has come online over the last 20 years, let's say, and the adherence and the mandate to be involved in the development of soccer and the pathways that now exist, the opportunities that now exist that didn't exist back in the day. And so this is, even though it looks like right now he'll probably be loaned out and go on, and who knows whether he becomes the greatest thing in the world or if he becomes, to your point, Mossy, another Freddie Adu and doesn't live up to all of the hype. Who knows? To be quite honest, who cares? Because this is a player that was given an opportunity that back in the day, when MLS didn't exist, he would not have gotten. And he is not just alone. This isn't just a brief shining moment of success. He is in a long line now of young American players that are getting opportunities that have never existed. And it's because of Major League Soccer. And guess what? It will be because of USL and NWSL. As much as you may hate the structures of these leagues or what they are doing or what they are not doing or some romantic notion about how we are killing the game, it is only helping an American soccer player, an American soccer generation that needs these opportunities and needs these pathways. So congratulations to him. Congratulations to Major League Soccer for what you are doing. And congratulations to American soccer. You've come a long way, baby, as the saying goes. Anything before we go, my friend?
One last thing. I had a real treat on Saturday afternoon. Do you know who I ran into at the Barnes & Noble at the Grove?
No, but you're going to tell me.
Erin Schechter and her boyfriend.
Really?
Yes, who is a very nice boy, by the way. They're a cute couple.
Really? You approve?
Yes, yes, yes.
This is a bookstore?
Correct.
It still exists?
Yes.
What do you go there to buy books? What are you doing?
I go there to sift through the different books, decide what I want to read next, and then I usually go on Amazon and order it there.
All right. Listen, Mossy. Keep downloading and reviewing and rating and doing all that stuff. Again, a reminder, I'm heading off to Dallas for the U.S. games when it comes to Nation League. We will have a special midweek interview that I think you're going to like that talks about some of the perspective when it comes to the past and the history of soccer. That'll be dropping into your feed. And then, again, a reminder, live on X over there on Spaces, a recap and a review of the semifinal game between the United States and Jamaica over there in Dallas. That will be on Friday morning, and that will show up in your feed if you're not there live. But join us live, and you can talk about that or other things out there. Review, download, rate, subscribe, do all the different things that you do when it comes to the State of the Union. We appreciate all of that. We'll talk to you again, like I said, later on this week when it comes to the State of the Union pod and a lot of State of the Union out there. And until then, and as always, my friends, size the day.